You're listening to Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. Coming up, internet companies are reacting to a bill passed last week that would make it easier to sue them for their role in sex trafficking. Big names like Google and Craigslist opposed the measure. We'll hear from a tech writer who covered the story. First, hundreds of Milwaukeeans took to the streets 50 years ago to fight for fair housing, marching from the city's north side to the south side. The Milwaukee NAACP Youth Council and its supporters marched for 200 consecutive nights between August 1967 and March 1968 to get an open housing law enacted. Now, an effort by the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee and several other organizations is making sure the stories of those marchers aren't forgotten. Will Checkeritis joins us now to talk about the project. He's the Oral History Committee Chair for March on Milwaukee 50th Anniversary and a PhD candidate in history at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Will, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
How significant an event in Milwaukee history and in U.S. civil rights history were these marches?
Yeah, this is something that I think we need to remind people. Milwaukee was central to the open housing movement in America. Our NAACP Youth Council and their advisor, Father Grappi, led a series of marches for 200 days straight between 1967 and 1968. It was August to March. And they really showed a certain level of determination in working towards their cause. It was a broadly popular movement within the city's African-American communities and among their allies. But it was also a movement that saw vehement counterinsurgency and counter-protests. So it was a violent struggle in a lot of ways.
Hmm. And Will, the March on Milwaukee 50th Anniversary organization is working on collecting and documenting the stories of those original marchers. How are you doing that? How are you finding these people, first of all?
Yeah, well, let me first say that this is a really special project. It's a cross-institutional partnership between several different archives and historical organizations in the area. Kristen Leffelman at the Wisconsin Historical Society, Abby Nye and Heidi Anosko at the UW-Milwaukee Archives, Claiborne Benson at the Wisconsin Black Historical Society, Kevin Abing at the Milwaukee County Historical Society, and myself as a PhD student at UWM, we're all coming together to kind of pool resources, test our connections, and see who we can, what voices we can lift up within our community in Milwaukee that maybe haven't been heard yet.
And how are you finding those people?
So we're reaching out through different listservs around the city. Let me give you an example. Our last History Harvest, this is where we actually go out into the community and collect people's stories, was held at Marquette University's Raynor Memorial Library. We tapped into listservs at retirement communities, within the Catholic Church, within Marquette University. And for this specific harvest, we were trying to gather stories from individuals within the Marquette community and the Catholic Church community, and perhaps even some white counter-protesters if they were interested, but we didn't see very much turnout on that end.
Hmm. It also seems like there are certainly some people who are still in the area after 50 years, but many, I'm sure, have moved to other parts of the state or the country. Are there any efforts to be able to reach some of those people?
Yeah, and some have even passed on, obviously.
Sure.
This was 50 years ago. Yeah, efforts have been made. And I think through social media, say Twitter or Facebook, some individuals across the country have seen that we were doing this project, and they actually reached out to the Wisconsin Historical Society, and some interviews have been conducted remotely.
Hmm. And, you know, often history is written about the big, important people. You mentioned Father Grappi, for instance, and certainly mm-hmm. a lot has been written about him. Vel Phillips was very involved in this. She, too, has gotten more recognition in the last few years. But you're really going for the everyday people. I'm sure people who would be the first to call themselves just ordinary people. As a historian, yeah, and as part of this project, why is it important to talk to those everyday people?
Because these were the people on the ground really making this change happen. A lot of this organization took place away from the spotlight, outside of the halls of politics, in the basement of churches, took place in community centers, with different social justice, racial justice organizations around the city. We really want to focus through this whole project more broadly in centering the voices of youth who are engaged in the struggle at this time. That includes a lot of women as well, who often do not get, are not honored quite in the same way as some of those heroic civil rights figures, even at the local level, like Father Grappi.
Will Chakoritis is with us right now. He's part of the Oral History Committee for the March on Milwaukee 50th Anniversary Project. He's a PhD candidate in history at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. And Will, what is it like for you to hear these stories, to hear these memories of people who were involved in this really significant struggle 50 years ago?
Oh, it's so powerful. I mean, where to begin? I've been studying Milwaukee's civil rights history now for almost 10 years, and with each voice that we add to a project like this, I learn something new about that struggle. These are really felt emotional experiences for each individual involved, and it's touching, it's inspiring, it's energizing. I mean, part of this 200 Nights of Freedom project is to reignite this idea of protest, the idea that coming together, collectivizing, organizing, mobilizing, that this is the way that political change is really affected.
And you mentioned that one of the specific efforts is to reach out to people who were young people at the time. Do you see parallels between Milwaukee's political movements of the 1960s and political movements of today?
Oh my goodness, I do. Our second history harvest took place at the ACLU's Youth Social Justice Forum at UW-Milwaukee. And this event is specifically caters to youth and youth of color in the city. And what we wanted to do was build some connections between the activism of the past and the activism that youth are doing today. And we were able to capture a lot of those stories. And you'd be amazed how much these youth actually know about this civil rights story. I think that a lot of adults could really learn something from their experiences. They're organizing for their own struggles today that are, you know, that clearly demonstrate that a lot of the issues of the late 1960s have not been resolved.
And Will, a couple times in talking about this project, you mentioned churches and church basements and faith. How much is there a faith element to why people are saying that they became involved in this movement 50 years ago?
That's a really good question. I'm no expert in the relationship between the church and the movement, but I think there's certainly something to say for how faith-based institutions bring people together, provide a forum for people to express their humanity. And a lot of these issues around civil rights that we're discussing are, these are human issues. These are people who want their humanity to be seen, and churches provide that organizational apparatus to really affect that change that they're looking for, and also a place just to kind of share at an emotional level how they are dealing with a lot of these issues, such as housing discrimination or experiencing police brutality or experiencing education discrimination, etc.
Do you have a goal of how many people's memories you're hoping to record through this oral history project?
You know, we didn't set a hard number. I would say so far we have about 26 total people interviewed across three different history harvests, and then a couple more added in those remote interviews I had mentioned. We have over 600 minutes of interview content so far, and that includes 16 men, 10 women. And the majority of our interview subjects have been people of color.
If someone listening has a story to tell, if they say, wow, wait, I was there, I have a story to tell, how can they get in touch with you or the committee to share that?
I'm so glad you asked that. They can reach out to me directly. My email address is tchakir2@uwm.edu.
All right. Why don't you repeat that one more time?
Sure. No problem. tchakir2@uwm.edu.
Great. And Will, as we start to wrap up, I'm sure people like me listening are anxious to know how we'll be able to hear these stories when they're put together. What's the plan for making these accessible to people?
Certainly. So we are going to gather the rest of our interviews, and we are going to index them, assign metadata, transcriptions will be done, and we're going to sort of do that work through the Wisconsin Historical Society, and then all of our partner institutions will have copies of these interviews. Mm. And that includes UWM, and I do need to give a shout out to UWM's March on Milwaukee project. Folks can visit that project, uwm.edu/March on Milwaukee. That's a great place to learn more about this history, and I'm sure that we'll connect these interviews we're collecting for this project with that project.
Well, Will, thanks so much for sharing this with us. It's a really great story and a really fascinating project.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
That was Will Chakoritis. He's a PhD candidate in history at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. He joined us to talk about a new project collecting the stories of Milwaukeeans active in the Fair Housing Marches 50 years ago.